Hi, it's Chris Titley here. As part of the Sub 11 podcast, I'm joined by Ash Jones, CEO of Briar Resources. Ash, thanks so much for being part of this series.
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
Now, for the listeners out there that have no idea what Briar Resources does and a little bit about the company, can you talk about the business and the operations that you have?
Yeah, Briar Resources is a small junior. We're on the small side of the small caps, but we've got a lot of inherent value in our business. We've got a manganese joint venture with a bigger company that's got smelters, OMH Holdings, and we've got another JV with Australian Vanadium. So we've got a whole lot of assets that we spend money on, and some assets that we don't, that give us an underlying value, which is really important in this small market cap space.
And Ash, if you took an analogy like a stock portfolio, someone has many stocks and many bets, I suppose. Can you talk about the different types of assets that you've got and where you are in that cycle of excitement?
Yeah, so we've got basically three assets that are, we're not spending our money on. We've got the manganese, which is the JV. We've got a base metals JORC resource for copper and nickel in the tails of Australian Vanadium. And we've got shares in another listed company, Star Minerals, which is about 14% holding. So those are our dormant value-adding ones that are happening in the background. Then we've all got our own portfolio of lithium assets that we've been exploring, copper assets, which are up near DeGrussa, which is really, it's a high-risk, but a very high-reward area to try and have a big copper target. And we've also got other copper targets around the place as well. So we're pretty well set. We spend our money on the copper and the lithium, and then the others add value to our company by spending their money on the other ones.
And in regards to the geographic location, can you talk about where it's based and I suppose the association with your name?
Yeah, so we're in that is the association. The Briar Basin is well known for its copper deposits. DeGrussa Sandfire is probably the biggest one up there. They've done, they drilled that and turned into a $1 billion company. Horseshoe Lights hit another one up there. That's probably in the late 80s. So they're there. We got onto one last year, but they're pretty hard to find. So there's another one out there waiting to be found, and we've got some know-how to find it. So the Briar Basin is also the home of the manganese as well. So we operate that on the other side of the range. And it's also prospective for gold as well, with Fortnum Gold Mine less than 20 k's away. So it's a great place to be, and it's the right geology, which is the most important thing.
Now, I have been following your social media, and in particular your Twitter account, where you did talk about recently the manganese price. Can you talk about the price dynamics and the market, the manganese market at the moment?
Yeah, the manganese market has been reasonably subdued until about probably 3 months ago. It was sitting around about $2.80, which was a 6-year low. So we pretty much put that on hold. What happened was there was a cyclone came through the top of the MT, and it damaged the wharf at South 32's Groote Eylandt deposit. So that's basically taken out 25% of the world manganese trade.
Right.
So the price has jumped from $2.80 to about $5.60. So it's gone up, $2.80 in that time. So it's pretty important for us. That's 100% gain. So these are the opportunities that we need to take. And there's probably a window of probably 15 months where that price will stay very high, and we're well placed to try and capitalize on that.
And let's talk about the copper market as well, a very talked about market at the moment on a global basis with some potential or non-potential M&A activity at the big end. Can you talk about the copper market at the moment for you and what you're seeing?
Yeah, I think the copper market, with electrification, the copper market has to go up. There's no doubt about it. There's been some studies. Basically, the Queensland Institute of Technology, I think, came out and said, if we're going to be net zero in 30 years, we need to mine almost as much copper as we've done in the last 70,000 years. So we've got to increase production by 100%. And that's just to basically get all these electric engines out. So the demand is there. it's you know, the price is starting to reflect that demand. So I think it's going to be a great place to be for all companies over the next decade.
And can you talk about your joint venture there, in particular one of the projects, the copper nickel gold project, and how that works in regards to the different various roles the parties have?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. It's you know, we've got basically a JORC resource with nickel and copper on somebody's tail. So Australian Vanadium are well progressing their iron and vanadium story. So what happens there is they mine it, they take out with a magnetic separation the iron and the vanadium, and what's left we can actually upgrade the copper sulfides and the nickel sulfides and the cobalt as well with it in a very simple process. So we don't have to mine it, we don't have to process it, we just have to process the tail. We've been working with Australian Vanadium in the past. I actually worked with them through their BFS. And so there's actually space in their plant design for that process. So we're excited to see them get up. Hopefully the vanadium price goes up there, and then we'll get into production when they get into production.
And Ash, with your projects that you've currently got, when you've gone into them, how have you gone about looking at them? Do you, and particularly ones in the future, you're looking at 100% stakes, you're looking at for small stakes, or you're looking for partners like you've just done in regards to a JV?
Yeah, I think it all comes down to expertise and where the board wants to be. But you know, I actually joined by consulting on the manganese, because I run manganese. I'd already sold it before I joined the company to OM Holdings. So they didn't have that particular expertise. So they went out and found people who wanted it. So I think, you know, the board's very good at doing that, seeing what they're good at and what they believe in. And then, you know, if it fits their set of skills, they'll kind of develop it. So I think they're very much an exploration mindset to add value. So they'll try and monetize those assets where they can, or keep them for the future and let them develop and mature into money-making ones. So you know, I think they're very proactive in keeping adding value on the way through, which is important for all our assets.
With the swings and roundabouts in commodity prices on a daily basis, and certainly, as you mentioned, like some events happen and things move up and down, As the CEO of the company, how do you go about sort of allocating capital on a longer term basis when you see these large short term fluctuations?
That's a really interesting question. It is actually really difficult sentiment in the market. If you're not playing in the right space, sometimes you do lose that. You know, you've got the belief, but the market doesn't have that belief, so you're not doing the best for shareholders. So you do have to follow the market sentiment and to a degree, but we've all got our underlying beliefs. You know, I still believe copper is going to be short, but you need the shareholders to believe that with you. So there's a, and it's hard to go against the mainstream sometimes. We saw that with the lithium boom. There's definitely going to be a long-term demand for copper. There's definitely going to be a long-term demand for lithium. So it would be nice to stay true to your beliefs straight the way through, but you do have to, massage your message and, talk about that, what is out there and to the market, because, sometimes that's what they like to listen, and that's where the majority goes. So,
And when you mentioned the word messaging there, I mean, it's sometimes a bit of a tough spot to be in a sort of small cap mining stock and even small cap technology stocks, et cetera, at the moment, where the large end of town's running, but the small end of town's not. What are you doing as a company to sort of say, hey, we're still operating, we've got a portfolio of suites, we've got a big belief of where this is going and come along for the ride?
Yeah, good question again. You know, we go to conferences. We've actually just brought on a marketing person as well to manage our social media and try and get our message out there. The board realises we're good at the technical stuff, but sometimes not as good at the marketing stuff. And, kudos to people like you, Chris, as well, using different avenues to get it out there is actually really important, because you're hitting different investors, and not everybody follows one site. So it is hard. There's a lot of juniors out there, and there's a lot of good projects out there, and so you do have to be forefront of people's minds. So yeah, it's actually probably the most difficult job I've got, is actually trying to be stand out from the crowd and being differentiated.
Yeah, no, for sure. And in regards to sort of what drives you as CEO of the company, and what excites you, you did talk about those optimistic views about those commodities. You want to deep dive into that, or is there something else also that gets you out of bed every day?
Oh, what gets me out of bed? I'm a technical guy. I love the exploration side. I love diving into data, and I like seeing results and successes. So I think that's what drives me in a way. I've got to work on my marketing a lot better. That driving it and actually, the excitement of a discovery is actually probably what gets me out in the morning. And I think we're there in a lot of places to see value added to our company, which is most important as well.
I've got another question around resilience in regards to mining CEOs. You've obviously, through your career, you've seen some big hits, like you talked about Sandfire, and you've seen some big misses. I mean, when something comes off, obviously there's a dopamine and a euphoric feeling, but then when something doesn't come off, it's not so good. How have you gone about managing that resilience and being a realist as well?
I think you've got to have the right personality. We kind of believe that we're exploring the right way, and it does take a bit of luck in there, in the right place at the right time. There's been some really amazing stories about somebody who's gone and just grabbed these uranium assets just before it's exploded, and the guy
yes.
That had them 2 years before held on to them for 10 years thinking it would. So it's a bit of combination of timing, being at the right place at the right time, but also, unless you're doing things, you're never going to succeed. So drilling holes, getting out on the ground is probably the most important thing. You have to make your own luck, and you can only make your own luck by drilling more holes and doing it smartly with investors' money.
Sure. I think we'll leave it on that note. We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for giving us a bit of an update on Briar Resources and explaining the company to those of the people out there that may not know about it, and also the optimism towards the commodities that you talked about that you are investing in, and as well as looking to develop over time. I wish you all the best and looking forward to catching up.
Yeah, thanks very much, Chris, and thanks for your time today.